about changing the way in which we admit everyone to school. This is about changing the way in which we teach everyone to be lawyers. This is about changing the way in which we think about lawyering. It's about changing the way in which we think about being a police officer. It's about changing the way in which we think about being educators. So the goal, as I said, is to short-term climb backwards up that cheese grater, but only do it in the long-term service of a vision to share power, not to hoard it. Thank you very much.
Lani Guinier, the first black woman tenured law professor at Harvard University, giving a keynote address to the U.S. National Women's Studies Association, June 14, 2000. Guinier's speech was recorded and edited for Wings by Frieda Worden. Lani Guinier was one of the most prolific and sought-after legal scholars in the United States. She published 5 books focused largely on democratization and social justice. She died at age 71, January 7, 2022. Wings thanks your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book, The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I'm Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland. What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
All My Greatest Teacher Showed Me Love, a new mental health program hosted by Zan, providing tips and tools along with music, interviews to lighten and brighten in these uncertain times. Join the community every first and third Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. only on KBOO 90.7.
All you need is love.
Hello, I don't even know your name, but I'm hoping all the same, this is more than just a simple hello.
Hello, do I smile and look away? No,
good morning, Portland Pollies. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, and you are listening to Radical Romance, the show for those of you in non-traditional relationships. You may have an open relationship, you may have a polyamorous experience in life, but this is the show for you. And if you'd like, you may call in. Call in number is 503-231-8187. I have a guest with me today named Mark, who I'm going to interview about his romantic and sexual experiences, and I'll get to that in a second. I'm going to start with a little sad personal news first. Those of you who have been listening a while know that I've spoken for the last year about my own polytriad, polycule, as they're known, came to an end at the beginning of this month. And there had been some ongoing tension between my two partners. They've been on the show. You may know them as Ken Dahl and Stuart the Human, formerly known as Stanley. And so there had been some tension between the two of them, and they had each expressed to me privately their discontent with what was going on in the polycule, and one of them called a meeting of the three of us and announced that he was pulling out of the situation. He also said he wanted to stop seeing the other person and continue to see me, which is great for me, but sad for the other person. So anyway, that's the latest. Can't say I'm happy about it, not at all. For the most part, it was working. We had a lot of really nice times together, the three of us. It felt like a very nice little family experience, in addition to the romance and sex and all of that. So that's my personal news. You're welcome to call in and ask me about it. I'm going to change the tone because I heard a few poly jokes over the last month, which I want to share with you folks. First one is, what do you call a poly contractor? You know, the guy who fixes your water heater, stuff like that, build your house. What do you call a poly contractor? And the answer is a polyhammerist. Next, a poly drag queen. What do you call the poly drag queen? Well, her name would obviously be poly glamorous. So that's all I've got. Mark is over here like yawning, like, oh, no, groaning.
The worst jokes are the best jokes, Tony.
Yes. So I typically start off with some of the ethicist columns that I think will provoke thought in you listeners and may generate some phone calls with your own opinions about them. So let's see. This first one, my girlfriend keeps looking through my phone. Should we break up? So the writer writes, and he's a 60-year-old man. He's been divorced for 8 years. Since his divorce, he's not remarried and had a few significant relationships. Currently, he's in a relationship of 16 months with a recently separated woman. They don't live together yet, and they spend most of their time together. But on a few occasions, he has caught her snooping through his phone. He asks, the writer asks, the relationship is otherwise quite fulfilling, so should I break up? And the ethicist goes on to respond, is there an ethical standard for assessing a partner's devices with or without permission? Now, for one thing, there could be highly confidential information that you may not want your partner to know about. They could be messages from your doctor's office or therapist's office, could be lab results. So some things you do want to keep private, even in a relationship. For instance, here's another example that I hadn't thought of that the ethicist did. How can you plan a surprise party for your partner if they're always snooping through your phone? Mm-hmm. Well, there goes the surprise. So the ethicist goes on to say, being in a relationship doesn't mean forfeiting all claims to privacy, individuality, and autonomy. Surveillance is not a shortcut to trust, he goes on to say. So he suggests that they take precautions. He also suggests, as he always does, couples counseling and letting his partner know he will be happy to go with her to the counseling just so she feels he's on her side, he's got her back. And they have a neutral third party to help them work through some of these complicated issues. I also found Q&A I like in the Oregonian of all places. They have an advice page with Q&A, and the writer of this one is a woman. She goes on to say she had found her husband having an affair. This was 6 months ago. He says he put it behind him. They have moved on. She writes quite happily that there are no current issues in the relationship. However, she recently discovered that he has been writing checks out of their joint account, sending them to this woman that he had the affair with. She knows the woman has tried to be friends with her, but friendship didn't pan out. But the advice columnist goes on to answer, he believes that this person may have gotten involved in what's called a romance scam. They happen quite frequently when you meet people online, dating apps, things like that. I myself, I was telling Mark before the show, was once a victim of identity theft, and someone who managed to get into my email, send emails with my personal signature to my financial planner asking to withdraw money and send it to a different account this time. And so, yeah, it's a dangerous situation when somebody gets a hold of your personal information. The person who was pretending to like me said to me one time, let's play a get-to-know-each-other game. Let's ask each other questions, and let's just answer them honestly and brutally. And so he went on to say, what was the name of your favorite childhood pet, Tony? And then he followed up with, and what is the name of the street you grew up on? And I'm like, these are not get-to-know-you questions. You are pumping me. These are security questions. You're pumping me for personal information. And I happened to call my bank one day for some other business, and they said to me over the phone, do you know you have a wire transfer in process for $20,000 to a B of A account? And I was not with B of A. And so I said, no, can you please stop it? And the bank did not. So I left that bank. Luckily, they're insured, so I did get my money back. But not before the person had gotten $20,000 from someone, my bank, I guess. And so the person who writes the column for the Oregonian goes on to make the referral of FBI.gov that you can report. If you've been a victim of a romance scam, you can report the person. I didn't know about this when I was a victim of the identity theft, but I just made a report with the non-emergency line of the Portland Police Department, and I went online and filled out the paperwork, and they took care of things, and it was a lot simpler, I think, than going through the FBI. So let me see, what else do I have for you folks today? The guy I'm dating wants us to be exclusive. Do I have to? 20-year-old college student who met someone new this spring, instantly clicked, dated for a few months, visited college. They're both living in New York over the summer. Enjoyed each other's company. So far, so good. But then what happens? I'm looking through my notes here, so I make sure I give you the correct answer. From the ethicist, Americans today are experimenting with a remarkable range of approaches to sex and relationships. Some people just want the thrill of unpredictability, and so they do hookups, no strings. Others go for bounded polycules, that means bounded, closed relationships. You may have more than one partner, but you may want to kind of make it as monogamous, I guess, as it can be when you are three or more in a romantic partnership. So the ethicist goes on to conclude, you want to make good decisions about health and safety in a relationship. This hasn't happened, the ethicist claims to the writer. You didn't want to promote exclusivity. You were trying to be honest in the moment. But sleeping with others in stealth causes the other partner to want to blame you.
You know, I find it interesting. I think every single one of these things that you bring up makes me think about relationship agreements.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and how in each one of these cases, like even with the romance scam kind of thing, it's like, how are you making decisions together about money? I mean, do we know? I mean, the initial thing starts to make me think, well, you know, if someone has made themselves, obviously the cheating has happened before. We don't know what's happened with this money afterwards. Is that some kind of blackmail that's happening to do with that?
And it's really not fair to write checks to someone not your partner from your joint account with your partner.
Which wouldn't be, I think, sensible in any relationship agreement if it's a joint account, unless you made that agreement.
Right.
Yeah.
The person speaking right now is Mark. Mark is the person I'm interviewing today. So, Mark, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about your history?
Sure. Okay. Sure. I've been non-monogamous for a little bit more than a decade. I identify as pansexual. I've lived in the Portland area for the last for the last 4 years or so.
Are there any good resources for pan folks in Portland?
That's an interesting question. I don't think I've ever really thought about that. I think that because Portland is such a kind of like pan city, I think, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it seems to be for sure. At least that's my experience. I think that's why this show is on the air, because it is full of people in non-traditional relationships. And I have been surprised doing this show how many people have called in who have their first same-sex experience over the age of 60.
Sure.
Now, I identify as gay or queer, and most gay or queer men feel like they knew that they were different even as children. For me, I was always attracted to the superheroes, because here you had men with muscles, and those muscles were covered in tights.
Yeah.
You know, so you have this clingy fabric material straining against big, muscly guys. I knew I was drawn to that for some reason. So anyway, that's my take on that.
I think I had the very classic kind of like experience of that I think a lot of quote unquote heterosexual men have, where it's like, oh, but everybody would go gay for that guy, right? Just that guy, right? Mm. And it's like, if you really examine that, and then you're like, oh, maybe you're not entirely straight.
Kind of like a hall pass. Like, why make an exception for...
And then you realize that it's not one guy. It's like maybe 100 guys. And whilst your primary attraction isn't that one thing, you certainly have more attractions than whatever heterosexuality thing. And, you know, I think a lot of people as I think we were talking about this beforehand, I think a lot of people, as the folks who, homosexual men and lesbian women, as they've done all this work, because they can't be anything other than they are,
mm-hmm.
it's made it safer and safer for people like me,
mm-hmm.
who can very easily, and in fact, the default for me is to have relationships that pass, you know, society scrutiny. But those people have done that work in order to make it safe for people like me to be our full, whole and true selves. So, yeah.
I'm curious, have you ever found yourself in a situation where you've begun to date someone, doesn't matter what gender they are, but you start to date somebody, and do you then have to, quote, kind of come out to them as a pan, or is that something you're just open about from the start and they instantly know that through some of your early conversations?
I've been identifying that way for a fairly short amount of time. I think I've identified as queer for about 4 or 5 years and pan for about the last 3. Mm-hmm. I think, again, because I'm dating in this city, people, the type of people who I'm dating anyway, mm-hmm. would make that kind of assumption. And also I would talk about it freely. I think I had the interesting opposite reaction, the situation where, you know, near the start of my non-monogamous journey, I was dating 2 people at the same time who came to me and told me, I am not a woman anymore. I'm like, that was before I identified as queer. I'm like, well, how do I respond to that? Because, you're right, you're actually not a woman, and I kind of know that. Like it is in who you are, and that you're coming out to me as non-binary or trans is like not really a surprise. And what does that say about me? And that was, I think, when I started wrestling with the idea of whether or not I was actually heterosexual or not. So so the opposite reaction, the opposite way around. People came out to me as something else. So yeah.
So how did you find your own comfort level with who you were attracted to and how you were going to pursue relationships and dating?
I think I was very lucky that when I started to question those kinds of things, I was largely surrounded by supportive people. So I didn't really have, I remember in an old workplace, there was a conversation on Slack once, which was like, how did you come out? And I'm like, I didn't really, quote unquote, big bang, come out. I was just around people who just assumed that you could be anything you wanted to be. And over time, I was like, oh, well, this isn't quite who I am. I'm not quite heterosexual. I'm not quite this thing. So I went through, and we were talking about this before as well, I went through the temporary kind of like thing of identifying as heteroflexible. And then I wrestled with the label queer for years and whether or not that was an appropriate thing for me to be able to, like whether I was appropriating other people's struggle in some sense, because I don't, I have struggles in other regards, but my queer journey isn't a story of struggle in the way that it is for a lot of people. For me, my queer journey is a story of being able to freely kind of like introspect on who I am and not have much external pressure on whether that's safe or not. Obviously, things are changing a little bit in the world right now, I didn't really have to be uncomfortable at any point in that situation. And I think I have a lot of people in previous generations to thank for being able to have that without fear.
It's nice of you to acknowledge.
Yeah.
How do you typically meet people you wind up dating?
Recently, it's mostly been the dating app Field.
Is Field specifically for pansexual folks, or?
Not specifically, but I do think that it is biased towards folks of flexible both gender and sexuality. I think that more of the people that you see on that app, and I certainly like a few of the newer dating apps, I think have kind of that bias towards people who are not, you know, if we're thinking of Kinsey scale, right? Like people who are not 1 or 6 on the Kinsey scale, right?
Nice. Yes.
I think that it's been a very interesting experience on some of those apps where I tend towards I don't really do the either completely casual relationship nor the dyad of like, so I identify as solo poly, right? So I live by myself. I've chosen to live by myself.
Say that again, solo what?
Solo poly.
Solo poly.
Yeah, I choose to live by myself for a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's also relatively new as well. I think that's within the last 3 or 4 years. And so I don't like I'm living a lot of the time in the in between, right? So, yeah, and I think those kinds of apps do provide a lot of space for living in that in between.
Speaking of those apps, I'm curious as a pan man, do you go on one of those apps looking specifically for a certain gender or orientation? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think that I mostly have on apps, not entirely. So most of the time I look for anything but men. And not because I'm not interested in men, but because of the hard, difficult conversations about men not necessarily always doing the work for their own psychological health, I tend to only make men that I engage with through friends. I do occasionally then like turn the filter and go, okay, this. I haven't actually been on a dating app for about 6 or 8 months, I think, because I have a wonderful group of a wonderful network of partners at the moment. And I don't really feel the need to add. But yeah, I usually look for any gender except cis men. And then cis men who I engage with are people, are through people I know. So usually through alternative lifestyle spaces in Portland and stuff.
For the listeners, define cis men. I mean, I know what it is, but
yeah. I mean, well, let's go with assigned male at birth men, because obviously,
and they're content
even
with,
cis is a little bit difficult, right? Because
yeah, and they're content with what they've been assigned.
People who are content with what they've been assigned. Yeah, I like that as well. Yeah.
Are there any, like, gay and lesbian men and women
mm-hmm.
have either male gay bars or women's bars, places oh. where they can publicly meet people of the same orientation? Are there any places where pan folks can go and meet other pan folks?
I'm going to joke here and say Portland. I think that it's
this
no
is the city.
Yeah, it's no accident that I've ended up here. I think
mm-hmm.
I think that I mean I lived for for 2.5 decades in London, and you know a little bit of time in another city in England, and then I lived a decade in Phoenix, and yeah, I didn't end up here by accident. I think that lots of things led me here, and I think the answer is Portland. Yeah.
Was one of the things that led you here is that Portland had a reputation for non-traditional relationships or non-traditional individuals?
No, actually, although it is what's kept me here, if that makes sense. I actually moved here originally because a partner of mine from Phoenix moved to Portland. Somebody I'm no longer with. So a partner of mine from Phoenix moved to Portland. Another partner of mine and I traveled to the US during the worst of the pandemic, the early parts of the pandemic. And then when we got to Portland, we decided to stay in Portland. And then so that partner and I actually decided not to live together anymore. We're actually still together, but not living together. She actually got married this weekend to someone else. Which is amazing. She is very happy in that relationship. But the person that I moved to Portland to be close to is no longer somebody I'm no longer in a relationship with. But that was how I got here. I felt so sorry to hear about your triad implosion. But I mm-hmm. also had a triad implosion and some other relationship implosions when I got here. And since then, I've kind of like every single time I thought about leaving Portland, I was like, but what about all these wonderful people that you love that are here? And, you know, so, and the arts, and so it's what keeps me here, but mm-hmm. it's not what brought me here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But going back to meeting folks, how does one who's pan meet people typically?
I mean, I can only speak for myself. I think activities, and I think that's one of the things about being here is that one, dating apps, and in fact, I've met the vast majority of people that I meet through dating apps. But because of the fact that there is such a concentration of flexible sexuality and gender,
mm-hmm.
and it being easier and safer. Now, easier and safer rather than easy and safe.
Right.
It is easier and safer to be any one of those things here. I think you can actually just kind of live your life. Like, I think that I recently joined a makerspace to work on my business, and I'm going to guess that, you know, probably a larger than representative number of people are pan or, you know, poly or any of those things in those spaces, just because we're in Portland, and also that's in a creative space too. So dating apps and just living life, I think. Because I think you were talking about, so you identify as a gay man, I think, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that in the past, that has been a thing where you've had to go to specific places because those are the only specific places where it's safe, yes, to be that kind of person. Yes. As opposed to, you know, the city, which, you know, it has its own issues. I don't think Portland is all that great at, it's certainly not as great at being a good place for being a person of color,
mm-hmm,
as it is to be, you know, and whilst I am half Asian, I pass as white. So I think it's not as good for being a person of color as it is for being non-monogamous, queer, you know, transgender, you know, those kinds of mm-hmm, things.
Right. I'm glad you made that distinction between easier versus easy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think so.
It's never easy being part of any kind of minority, whether it's a sexual minority, romantic minority, because men in particular are good at sort of separating the sex from the romance. At least I'll speak with men in my own community.
Sure.
There's sport sex and then there's romance sex, and they can be very different things.
I think it's interesting, the idea that all, any of these things has to be binary. In the sense of, like, I mean, I have partners who are part of my day-to-day life and part of what I call them pulse partners. That's not a phrase I've heard anywhere else, but I've thought a lot about how I want to describe my partnerships. And I have, like, pulse partners, partners who are part of my everyday life. And then I have everything from that to folks who are more play partners. Like, I have, mm-hmm, a play partner who lives in a different city, for example. And I don't know that it's like there is never, you know, I don't know that it's one of those things where it's like these things are one thing and these things are another thing, and there is never any romance in a play partnership, or there's never any just like kind of like, well, this is just a play, a section of time that's play in something that's a romantic partnership. Or in fact, I have romantic partnerships that have no sexual component whatsoever.
Well, getting to sex for a second, are there places, public places, where pan folks can go for sex? Like, gay men have bath clubs, sex houses.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything for the pan community where they can go and have public sex?
I think that, for myself, I've been to certain festivals, mm-hmm, that have been... I don't know what our policy is on talking about things like actual specific names of these things, but I've been to specific festivals that have been around that kind of stuff. I think there are clubs. I tend not to, I don't at all engage in those types of clubs, not because I have any, think there's any shame with those things. I believe that alcohol has a very, very potentially dangerous influence on consent, and if I'm going to be engaging with people like for the first time, you know, I don't want to be in a situation where I am not sure whether or not they can completely consent because they might be drunk. And so I think every single one of those clubs that is present in Portland, except I think one, I've heard that there is one that doesn't, but and also it's just not my kind of scene, right? But but every single one of those clubs,
speaking of drugs and alcohol,
yeah.
I had read years ago, many places, the 80% rule, which is drugs or alcohol are involved in 80% of all HIV transmissions.
Really?
80% of all unplanned pregnancies.
Right.
80% of all domestic violence. Typically, good things do not come out of lowered inhibitions through drugs or alcohol.
I think there's room for people to have like a drink, or sure, you know, a little bit of a vape, and you know, but then I'm only doing that with people. I would only engage with and play with people who I knew very well,
right?
Or at least have some transitive trust with,
mm-hmm,
because of people that we share, in order to, like, you know, even for people to have a drink, and you know, I think it is, like you say, I didn't realize that was a figure that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel surprising to me, certainly.
You said something a minute ago. What did you say that was? Whether or not you could sort of recommend certain organizations, yeah. places, things like yeah. that. Well, you can speak to your own experience, which is, yeah. I had a great experience with this. Yeah. I personally would recommend it.
Yeah.
But you cannot say, so I think all of you people of a certain should go to this place.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So I think that I have had some positive experiences at Kinkfest in terms of you know, those kinds of festivals. And there are a lot of people, I think, who have various different types of... In that particular community, I think there are a lot of people who have flexible sexualities.
Well, for the listeners, how do people who might be interested in Kinkfest or...
Sure. I think it's... I can't remember if it's kinkfest.org or I think it is that. But there's a website. It's a once-a-year festival that happens... an expo center somewhere in the Portland area, and I think it runs over an entire weekend. I want to say it's something like Friday through Sunday, or maybe Thursday through Sunday.
Okay, I'm told, Mark, we've got a caller on the line.
Oh, great!
Hi, caller, are you there?
Yes, hi, Tony. Yes, and I didn't catch your brother's name there, but
Mark,
this is Tangent. And you mentioned something earlier, and you said kind of monogamous, I think it was, or somewhat monogamous. And so what I was curious about is because I've been in, we've been married and divorced and still living together, but totaled 38 years, mm-hmm. and it is monogamous. And I just wondered if we could even question the, I'm not here to, let's see. I find your show very fascinating, just because anything that you don't know that much about can be, it certainly can be. But then you mentioned briefly well, okay, so here's another thing. Then it was said that minority relationships are difficult, and I would just say that all of them are.
Yes.
But you may certainly have had more social pressure, obviously did. My definition of love, it's work. All right, and I make mm-hmm. an acronym of that. We only really know, you know, if you help clean a bathroom, if you do dishes, if I'm speaking as a male, and you know, this regular relationship, whatever, it's binary, I think you call it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any thoughts like that?
Well, I think you're speaking to basically the simplicity of just being mindful of what your partner might enjoy, what you enjoy. What you can enjoy mm-hmm. together,
yeah.
and act accordingly with your partners, whether they be sexual or romantic.
Yeah, I might just bring up another aspect, but it's certainly part of it. My wife had to have a breast removed.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will end a relationship over this, and I'm not them. But one morning she just said, a couple of days after, she said, she was looking in the mirror, and she just got out of the shower, and she said, I'm ugly. And I just sang a line from, you are so beautiful. You know, that one, you know, because, mm-hmm. like, I'm not bragging, but that may have what originally attracted me, part of it, but it was always, you know, her mind, or she's French, she's cute. It's like a whole lot of things, you know, says mm-hmm. little French Americanisms that get mixes them up sometimes. It's a million things, but, simply that I see her as way more than that, and mm-hmm. I think I've mentioned before we've gone through times with like less sex and almost nil sometimes, but we do other things. She's in a very extended menopause, so can't explain all that, but
how old are each of you?
Oh, here's just for a word, because you used terms and I mentioned before, like poly, I forget how you pronounce it or how you put it together, but there's monogamous, and then there's polygamous, it's called. But I look at those as, it's missing an E, basically. And one is monogame, us, and the other is poly, or more than, you know, more games.
Okay.
One game or more than one game.
Well,
and I'm not making fun of any of this. I appreciate all you sound. You know,
polygamy, polygamy is plural marriage, and what we're talking about is basically... polyamory, which is
that's what you were, yeah,
plural
and
romance.
I was going on before about how I have, you know, I love trees, I love cats, I love that. So, and I don't have sex with any of them, but so but maybe you don't want to call it polysexual, but that's what you're talking about. So you mentioned
sometimes,
I don't know if you want to get into it or not, but you had what you called a triad implosion. It sounds like sometimes a breakdown, breakup, and you know, gosh, I don't, we have had lots of these in our own thing, but we just have each other, so we just keep, if it's 3 or 4 days or a week, we don't speak to each other, and this happened a number of times, unless now, you know, but goodness, it's just nice to have had that history, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. How long did you say you and your wife have been together?
38 years, 20 years married, and we got divorced in about 2008. It had more to do with financial reasons, but I did have to get out for other reasons, and then we got back together, and we've been together, like, unmarried, like, as a, you know, so now I guess we're common law married. Yeah.
What a romance.
And well, we love it, you know, and the story is beautiful. I mean,
it is beautiful.
I was saying that how we met in Trela, but I don't need to share another one of those, but, yeah, no, I had to learn French to ask her out on a date. I had to buy a French English dictionary and really learn my high school French. So there's that aspect also.
Well, you guys sound lucky to have found each other. And
no, it's not lucky. I mean, I know how people say that. And that's one of the things, my peeves with my wife. She'll see somebody driving a Corvette or something, go, oh, he's lucky, or they're lucky. And, hey, that guy gets to pay a big, huge, you know, whatever, a car payment every month, you know. It's not luck, it's work, okay.
Well, you're right, it is work. But another term I could use, and people may not like
this. I would say, like, yes, fated, maybe. I mean,
yeah, fated or blessed.
Yeah, I prayed for her, not her, but, you know, like this perfect love. I just said, thank you for my perfect wife, okay? But get this, it's so cute, because I've heard this, it's a unity term. Instead of saying, it's ask, give, and receive, so you don't go beg, please, right. please, just,
yes,
just
right.
God. You go, thank you for this, it's the perfect this, car, wife, house, what you want, job. Right. And you've already done, so there's the faith.
Yeah.
And then I said, but I just said it when I go, but could you make her European?
And my take is that in terms of the divine presence, it's not Santa Claus. You can't pray for things. You can't pray for a specific person. But what you described through unity is affirmative prayer, I believe, which is that it already exists in your life. You already have a perfect union. You already have the perfect partner for you.
I think that a lot of the time when people talk about luck, and I think when people are resistant to the idea of luck, I think it's because luck is both opportunity and work.
Yes.
Right? So I think that there are plenty of people who don't get opportunity, and so therefore they don't get the opportunity to work for. So this is when you know, people talk about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, which obviously has its own history as a term and not meaning what it's used for. But I think it's like the there is one part which is opportunity, and then there is one part of actually taking advantage of opportunities you're given. And some people are unlucky enough to never have opportunities, or structurally in a position where they can't have opportunity.
Ken, are you still there?
Oh yeah, I'm here. It's interesting. So anyway, I'm just glad to share that with you and let you know that others, and I don't know how to describe this. I just happen to feel, and you know, one of my things, I'm not one of these guys that think like it's nasty to look at other women or something. I mean, there's a lot of beautiful women out, so I just say look, but don't touch. And you know, I've actually been propositioned by clients and others, but it's like I just feel good about it. I had one woman ask me if I had a quarter for the phone, back when there were phones, public phones, and quarters to run them. But she asked me, do you date? And she was all dressed up, dolled up, kind of. Like, and I go, yeah. Then she goes, do you date? And I go, yeah, my wife. Anyhow, those are some of my thoughts, and I'm glad to share and listen to yours.
Thank you.
Well,
peace to y'all.
You too, Ken. And again, I think you're both blessed. Oh, and I'm sorry, Ken, we've got to go. I've got another caller on the line. Are you there?
Here.
Hi, caller, go
ahead.
Are
you there?
Yes.
I'd like to consider myself your number one fan, but that would be egomaniacal. Good morning, Mark.
Morning.
I am interested. I find very interesting your term, solo poly.
Sure.
I, too, came to this city some 30 years ago from Arizona, from the town of Prescott, in fact.
Phoenix for me.
Which, Prescott is a wonderful city.
It is.
And it's very small.
Yeah.
Very, very small. So I chose Portland as a destination because I thought maybe I could find those open minds in Portland that did not exist in Prescott.
Mm-hmm. Is this Jeff, by the way?
This is Dr. Tony, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure, I recognized your voice.
I'm calling to express the notion that the human heart is both tender and treacherous.
Surely. Sure.
And acts, and to my mind, acts of intimacy go directly to the heart, which is why over the course of years I have come to eschew the notion of casual playtime sex, because
well, Jeff,
my heart is tender, and I know that my heart can also be treacherous. And it seems to me that perhaps, Doctor, you've experienced this kind of quasi-treachery in the fact that your triad has fallen to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to know the details. I'm sorry about that fact.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
But
you know what?
Human heart is not to be toyed with because it is both tender and treacherous.
I think so,
Right.
And
I think
I think that that's why I think when I think I was discussing that, I think it's like when you have those kinds of like, when you have that kind of situation where you have relationships that are less frequently and regularly connected, I think you do have to check in about those kinds of things, right? And I think, I mean, we went back to relationship agreements. I think that, you know, I think that any work that we can do towards making relationship agreements more specific, and also to making emotions more specific too. I think when you are talking about relationships in which maybe you see a person once every 6 months or once a year, as opposed to 2-3 times a week.
The theme song for this show comes from a movie called Same Time Next Year about a couple who are married to other people who meet at a retreat and have a hot weekend at the retreat and agree to meet next year, same time.
And there are feelings involved in relationships like that,
These people are together for an entire lifespan.
Yep.
They bear witness to each other's growing families, children, the ups and downs of their marriages, and they share all of that intimate connection with each other.
Yep.
It's really a romantic movie, I think, even though it's about an illicit affair. I think it's one of the most romantic movies. It's called Same Time Next Year.
I mean, I think it's a shame. It's a shame if it's an illicit affair. It's a shame that they had to break a relationship agreements for that kind of thing, right? And I think that's why we're in this kind of spaces that we are, so we can have the richness of those different types of relationships.
Jeff, I have a question for you, which is, now don't let this go to your head, but I do think about you from between shows. And so I have a question for you that I've been wanting to ask. I knew you would call in again. Now, if I remember your story correctly, you haven't had any kind of romance or sex in your life since you tested positive, HIV positive in the early 90s. Is that correct?
And I had grave illnesses as a result. In fact, I was near death in 1991, 92, 93, 94. The protease inhibitors came out in 96, and I suffered a stroke in 1998, the day before my 35th birthday. Since then, I've also, the horror of shingles has emerged from my side and has not gone away. That was 10 years ago. I am a wreck. I'm in good shape, but I'm a wreck. And my heart is just like the heart of every other human being.
Right. And here's where my question comes in.
It is treacherous.
Yes. Yes. Now, you are a romantic guy. I know you're not into sex play, sex for sport. You're a romantic guy. What's it like being a romantic guy when you don't have any, or you don't permit yourself to have any romantic outlets such as dating? You kind of put yourself in a bind, it sounds to me.
Well, I don't consider it a bind. I consider myself to be something like what Mark has called himself, a solo poly, in that in my mind, sure, why not? The mind is the brain is the biggest sex organ anyone's got.
Right.
Agreed.
No matter how much you think your size matters, it doesn't. It's in the brain.
Right.
But the heart is another organ.
Yes.
And another point of our lives. And I am intimate in the sense of intimately connected with any number of people through the brain and through the heart, but not through the sex organs, because that kind of intimacy in my mind, to my mind, over the course of these many years, the kind of intimacy that involves sex and the achievement of orgasm is, it goes right to the heart. And unless your heart is in it, it will be pretty close to useless and possibly detrimental to your own self-esteem, because your heart may be wounded in the sense that I put my heart into this and it didn't work out. And all of it is a test of the self. And I'm just babbling now because let me ask you,
Jeff, I don't think I've ever asked you, how old are you? How old are you?
Once again, I am 62.
62. I'm older than you, Jeff.
So, I know that.
There are a lot of resources here in Portland for our generation. There's a group called Prime Timers, which I would highly recommend. I've been to their weekly dinners, which they have a weekly dinner for mature gay men. That's 55 plus. And at the Jubitz rest stop in Jansen Beach, which sounds like an odd location for a gay group in Portland to meet at, but they couldn't find a restaurant that was big enough to accommodate 20 people sitting down at one time every Saturday night. So there's Prime Timers, and I think their website might be primetimers.org, or PDX might be in there somewhere. There's Cascade AIDS Project.
But that's kind of a throwback to primetime television, which no longer exists.
Right, right. But yeah, and there's...
I appreciate your attempt to get me out there.
I do want you to be out there, because you're a romantic guy. I want you to have a little more... A little more actual hands-on experience with romance.
Now that's the term, Doctor. Hands-on, indeed. I'm going to hang up now because I've already made my points, and I'm just a number one fan of your great show. And Mark,
Jeff,
before you go, I
want to say I'm really glad that advancements in treating HIV have meant that you can still be here.
But I want to quickly point out, now that you've mentioned that, Mark, the so-called PrEP program.
Something I actually am on,
Which was originally manufactured by Gilead Sciences.
It's pre-exposure prophylactic.
A company that was owned and operated by Donald Rumsfeld, who was a major stockholder until his death. Gilead Sciences has finally had to release some of the patent, and now there is an option to Truvada called Descovy, and millions upon millions upon millions of dollars went into a system.
Yep.
And the cost to patients for PrEP has historically, maybe it's changed, has been $17,000 per year on a pill that you will take every day for the rest of your life. And I am not willing to take a pill for the rest of my life simply to go out and offer my heart to someone whose heart is not in it.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Goodbye. It's always great to hear from you, Jeff. Take care. Oh, and we have another caller. Hi, caller, are you there? Hi, this is Dr. Tony. Are you there?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Tony. Can you hear me?
Yes. Tell me your name.
Excuse me. My name is Britannia. And I have a question about literature and polyamory. Mm-hmm. Identifying as a polyamorous pansexual person myself. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to see if, like, I have a copy of The Ethical Slut, and I was wondering mm-hmm. if you had any recommendations, Mark, as well, for reading, or even like shows or something that accurately depicts polyamory or E&M lifestyle in general.
Well, in fact, it's funny you mentioned shows, because I watched one during this past week, Poly Family, which is about two married couples with five children between them. One of the couples came into the relationship, joined the other couple. They already had two kids. Another couple kids have come along since, and they have been choosing not to decide who the fathers are of the kids. But basically, the wives have their own bedrooms, and the husbands trade off every night, visiting each other's wives and their own wife on occasion. So that's sort of an enjoyable show. Last season, there were so many more poly shows, specifically on streaming services and cable TV. They're just not around anymore. Yeah. But I do love watching them for the entertainment purpose and just to see how other people manage their poly romances. So
I think for me, I think that the books I've most recently read are Polysecure and Polywise. I think Polysecure is really an interesting one to look at simply because of the fact that it applies kind of like a lot of the attachment theory mm-hmm. stuff. I cannot remember the author's name, but I think that to what Jeff was talking about, right?
What was the title?
Polysecure.
Polysecure.
Yeah, and there's also another one called Polywise, which is the same author. I believe that the author is an attachment theory expert of some description. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah, and she does a really good job, like, helping people to understand how attachment theory applies to because I think there was a really good attachment theory book, mm-hmm. which I cannot remember the name of, but the struggle for poly folks is that all of that attachment theory, like a lot of the, like, hey, this is what you can do to work with your attachment issues within a relationship. Right. We're all based within monogamous situations. And I think Polysecure has been, I know that lots of people, and I myself, have gotten a lot of things that have helped to make our relationship safer.
And for the listeners who don't know what attachment theory is, it's basically the psychological theory of how you are attached to your parents and caregivers as a kid mm-hmm. determines how you attach to your romantic partners as an adult. So some people have relationships that made them anxious as kids. Now they pick out anxious partners or people mm-hmm. who make them anxious as the partner.
Or even better, you can be like me and be a disorganized attachment person who sometimes expresses anxious attachment and sometimes avoidant attachment.
Nice, thanks.
I think it is a dream to... my spouse has a partner that lives with their husband and their boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
I think that's pretty amazing. And I have a hard time wrapping my head around something like that. But I definitely think that, somebody who's been married for a long time, and that would be something to get used to. But for my spouse's partner, they've been doing it for like 20 years and mm-hmm. They just went into it that way. And I think that's beautiful. And maybe not necessarily for me, but just that secure attachment definitely has to be there, right?
Yes, you're right. You're right. Well, Brittany, I want to thank you for the call. Getting the sign it's time for us to wrap up. Thank you for calling in, and please do so again. It was nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Sure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hello, I don't even know your name,
but I'm hoping all the same this is more than just a simple hello.
Hello, do I smile and look away? No, I think I smile and stay to see where this might go. Can't wait till we're alone, somewhere quiet on our own, so that we can fall the rest of the way.
I know that before the night is through, I'll be talking love to you, meaning every word of
Jello Biafra. If you're tired of the OCA, Walt Disney, Westinghouse, General Electric, and police departments telling you what you should listen to, stay tuned in to KBOO Portland, listener-sponsored, non-commercial community.